I need to take it off, Ryan. I think it's do it that way.
We're having troubles hearing again, Julie.
I am. I think it's on your end. My phone is in.
Okay, Daryl's working it.
What I said was I think Randy should kick it off.
Okay, while you keep working on that, in case you have any questions, I don't really have any opening comments except to say that just call this work session because as we closed the hearing, it was agreed that the parties were going to file their closing comments in writing, and that was going to start after the transcript was completed, which I think the estimate was like six weeks. So there's quite a bit of time between then and now, and as the attorneys plan, I'm sure they're already planning what their comments are going to be while they're waiting on those. And I just thought it might be useful to us to discuss and kind of work through some of the things that we believe are jurisdictional versus things that are non-jurisdictional that were talked about during the hearing, because frankly, I guess if I were an attorney on one side or the other, I would probably prefer to know if we were considering something jurisdictional versus non-jurisdictional, and then they can focus on it to whatever extent they might want to. So I'll turn it over to the reclamation people to kind of go through and give us some of your thoughts on it. But first, Commissioner Culp, do you have any opening comments before we start that?
Thank you, Randy. One thing I would offer up is that we probably should put in the record, it's RC 13-0, is that 850 or 860?
850.
To get that in the record. And then I just had a procedural question. Of course, there she is, Alana walked back in. I think the idea that we've got Jim put together a walkthrough jurisdictional, but I'm just trying to think about how this plays out. So both sides submit their comments. And then will this be a new order on top of the old one? Or can we put a one-page document that says our order's still good? I mean, I'm just trying to figure out what this looks like when we're done.
This will have to be findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order based on the record. It will be a formal order. It might conclude we're not changing anything, but it will have findings of fact and conclusions of law that lead you to that conclusion.
Okay, so it's no different, really, than what we'd normally do in a brand new hearing.
Right.
The fact that we've already issued an order.
Right.
Okay.
And then Ilana, my questions are kind of similar to Brian's. Would we be focusing on the first findings? Wouldn't our review be focused on the findings in our original order, and if those were, you know, after hearing this new evidence, if there's something not accurate in one of those findings, or what are, you know, what exactly are we focusing our review on? Because that was never made clear in the proceedings by the folks that brought the complaint.
You're expressing the perfect rationale for asking for the parties to file everything first and see what they think we want us to do. But no, your decision has to be geared to the issues in the hearing. I understand that there was lots of questions and maybe still some confusion about exactly what problems or complaints or issues were being raised. But nevertheless, that's why you sift through the findings and you sift through the argument to focus on those. Now, those issues, of course, they can be the issues that are part of finding a basis to grant a permit, and they could be outside of that. And so your answer might be different depending on whether they're inside or outside the jurisdiction of a permit. But you'll have to answer them regardless. Now, that, again, would go back to your first decision, and your first decision might cover all those issues, and it might not. As you sift through it, you will reach conclusions about those things. You might say, I've sifted now through everything, and my first conclusion was exactly correct, and I stick with it. You might say it was correct, but I'm adding six more reasons why they deserve a permit, or one of the issues is one of the piece parts of that initial decision, and I'm changing my mind on it. It can go many different ways, and that's part of why you really do want to see what the two sides, how they frame it, because that will give you a really good picture of all the ways it can go. It still may go another way yet, but it's helpful to see their framework of what they think the issues are. And it's all based, of course, on permit requirements and statute. It has to go back to that.
So, Lana, I would just offer a differing thought, and that's what I think this is not a brand new order. This, to me, we have issued an order. We're defending our order. It's not like this is new information. We've seen we've seen most of this before. And so we have an order that we're trying to defend, so it's a different staff lead. But that's just my thought, I guess. So, John, just grab me for 1 second. Please continue.
Does he want me?
Go ahead. Yeah.
It is and it isn't. Your initial decision was based on all the information available to you, and that's completely legitimate and appropriate. But now someone has asked for a hearing, which brings in the sworn testimony and the cross-examination. And so now you have this litigated body of information that someone is asking you. They're asking you to look at that and say, was I wrong or right when I issued that first order? I see it as two different things, but I don't see it as problematic in any way. But you do have to have findings and conclusions that are going to either support what you did or change what you did. That's the purpose of giving the person a right to a formal hearing with sworn testimony and cross-examination.
But all points will have to be addressed, whether I can't think of an example, but I'm sure there were points in that original mine permit that didn't have anything to do with the case that we had here. But I assume we will have to start over and address those points too.
Not if there was no challenge and no evidence about them.
Okay.
The circle of what you are going to talk about is what was in this hearing. If you take an extreme example, let's say the person asked for a hearing and produced no evidence whatsoever. No evidence. Well, then you have nothing. Your circle is empty. So you don't have to go back over the 29 things that Jim recommended when you first granted the permit, because there's nothing to talk about. The person brought nothing. And say the person brought up one thing, and the mining company then responded to that and added two more things. You did talk about those three things in this order. So that's kind of the way you're approaching it. Now, if one of those you think is totally outside the jurisdiction for a permit, you might not make factual findings on that. You might say legally that's not something we can talk about here. But you're still going to address it, but you might not have factual findings on it because you're saying it's not our business in this permit app. Clear as mud, right?
Well, to me, Lana, from what you're saying, it's almost like we go through each one of the witnesses that they brought and said this, you know, they talked about reclamation standards, you know, success in regrowth, this, and you go through each one, what we heard, what we found, and what we decided.
And that's kind of, I think, what Jim drafted here, right?
Yes, I put together a list, I guess, of the various topics that were discussed, and I guess I broke it down into what I felt was jurisdictional and non-jurisdictional. And Julie, I don't know if you had access to email or not, but I did email you that document here about 1:15.
Okay, I will pull it up, Jim. I do have my iPad, so.
Okay.
Okay, why don't you go ahead.
I'll go ahead. I guess starting out with those that I felt, and staff, I guess the staff and I got together and visited on this shortly after the hearing and kind of went through things too to
questions.
to try to group and categorize the various topics. And the first one, I guess, that had a lot of discussion was that alluvial valley floor determination. A lot of time was spent on that. And I guess the big issue associated with that was the sub-irrigation issue. So it's a matter with what was presented, and that, you know, is there evidence enough to cause that issue to be, you know, further revisited or to confirm what the staff determination was prior to Coyote Creek submitting the permit application. So the Alluvial Valley floor, that's one that is certainly jurisdictional. There was, you know, general discussions kind of starting out about overall compliance with reclamation requirements and is reclamation successful. And I guess that relates to one of the findings we have to make in issuance of the permit. And you know, part of what we use there, and there's again other discussion at the hearing, brought up the bond releases that have been granted for a variety of post-mining land uses, including cropland, hayland, native grassland, tame pasture land, where companies have met those standards. Some of those are, you know, that's just more of a general one. Then it got into some of the more specifics, some soils items, I guess, some discussion with regard to the soil respread depths or thicknesses, you know, compaction in reclaimed soils, rooting depth. Then, you know, general discussion on some of the management of the soils that are replaced on reclaimed lands. It kind of got into that soil health discussion.
Jim, if I could just ask a question on all this, the technical side. You know, obviously reviewed our order before I voted for it, and then certainly listened to all their testimony, but I didn't catch anything other than somebody interpreting data a little bit differently. And so how do we do that? Because that's where I was going before I got called out, because briefly, is that, you know, we have an order that we've developed. So it's almost like, why wouldn't we be working on our order now? I understand there's a time concern there, but I mean, we've looked at the data. We nothing jumped out at me in certain areas that contradicts what we've done. And so I think, is it a time concern? Or I mean, why wouldn't we put our own order together and at least have some findings that we start working on? I don't want to sit here for 6 weeks and then start that, almost like we do when we got different versions of orders coming through for commissioners having different opinions.
Okay, I guess I didn't realize that you wanted like a draft order.
No, I'm just, this is me talking. I'm walking this through, but I don't want to sit here for 6 weeks. And then that's what I appreciate Commissioner Crispin having this. But, you know, we have the experts here that put together the order that heard the testimony. You know, we want to be able to refute the points, my opinion.
Yes.
As they come through, because I didn't hear anything that makes me differ on much of anything. It's just making sure this is a real tight order.
Subject to the fact that the parties have the right to file
and
the closing
that.
Statement and the brief and the proposed findings or whatever. The proposed findings aren't essential, but the other things are part of their wrap-up rights kind of under the due process. We could take the outline, so to speak, and do a proposed order. I mean, I think staff has thoughts on
and that's where I was going, is
these.
That, and I'm not saying so much legal, but let the experts upstairs that did our analysis go through the order and look at what came out of the hearing and say, this point, this point, this point, here's what we think. And then so when we get the orders filed for both parties, they'll have their viewpoints, but I think that we want to make sure that we give ourselves the due diligence to go through all this ourselves as the people that were out there walking the ground that have the expertise in those areas.
But I think the step that we don't want to get ahead of is, we spent pretty much 3 full days here in a hearing, and I don't want to close my mind to the closing comments. Those are going to be important too. And so, you know, I do think that it's useful as they prepare their closing comments to know. And so far, as we've gotten through 3 of about 8 bullet points that Jim recommended as feeling the word jurisdictional. And I agree on these 3 so far as he's explained them. But I think that's good information for the sides as they're preparing their closing, that these are things that, I want to look at and hear their closing cases on.
And I agree with that. I perhaps am just looking at it differently, that I think that we should have three choices to look at, not just two. We should have the choice of the company, we should have the choice of the person filing the complaint, and we should have the choice of our staff that is defending their order.
Yes, we would definitely have that for you. I mean,
okay.
I mean, we can have it in whatever order works.
And that's kind of what this is, I think, what Jim is kind of is a beginning.
Preliminary
well,
to
it's,
that.
It's preliminary, I guess, just kind of listing what staff sees as the the topics that were brought up, issues that probably have to be addressed as far as what's jurisdictional and what isn't, and you know, trying to get down there and depending how you want to look at things, it's how deep do you go with regard to
we will need the transcript to write that order.
No, I understand it, but I don't want to be faced with the decision of I'm going to pick the company's side or I'm going to pick the complainant's side.
And you never are.
When you get two sets of facts or briefs filed, that's kind of what it happens sometimes.
Well, the staff always goes in and
I understand
writes
that.
It up. Staff. I mean, we've done these kind of complicated things a million times in public utilities, and we're not taking just one. We might start with one, but we're saying it the way we would recommend the commission say it and putting in those things. And I understand not wanting
anymore.
To wait. What I find helpful as counsel for the commission and for advisory staff is seeing how the two sides, it's just like a judge, seeing how the two sides formulate what they think the issues are and how they think they come out. I might not agree with either one of them, but that's another piece of information that gives me, that helps me formulate what I'm recommending. So it asks them to do a little bit of work and put their thinking caps on. How do you see this shaking out in an appropriate fashion for the commission if you were to win? So it's helpful. But we would also need the transcript because we will have to double check some of that testimony that we think we remember, and we'd be sure it's in there.
Yeah,
maybe I'm just getting overly hung up on this, but this is our order that has been issued and is defending. And the burden of proof is never came out in the court, but the burden of proof to me is clearly on those.
Oh, yes.
And that's very clear to my mind. So I think it's a big difference when you're defending your order, just like when we go in front of the Supreme Court. We have a whole different viewpoint of how we do that. And this is not a looking at two sides, in my opinion. We're looking at we have an order, and there's additional information coming in that we should look at, and I agree with that. But we have an order with our staff prepared that it is solid.
Yeah, I understand, I think.
Okay. I just want to get that out early because that's where I'm at, I guess. And I think that was part of this work session to get it out early for everyone's benefit. Anyway, I'll be quiet and listen now.
No, I agree with you. If you're not changing your order, you're going to say in that thing, there is nothing that came out in this hearing that changes my mind about X or Y or Z. That's exactly the approach that has to be taken, if that's the way you decide.
I just think for me it's a different mindset when you've already issued an order than when you're going into something the first time.
Okay.
I understand. Thank you, Jim.
Okay.
Alana, do you have a different view on what Brian just said?
I really don't. I think we're just saying it two different ways. you when you have a body of evidence, sworn testimony, you got to start with that evidence. You might say, that evidence convinces me we were right the last time. I see nothing there to change my mind. But you have to address the evidence. You can be overturned in the Supreme Court if you don't make findings and if you don't base your conclusions on the findings, and if you don't explain why you didn't believe the other facts that came up or why they weren't convincing to you. So the order has to address that body of evidence, even if in the end it says the original order is perfectly fine. And I think we're just explaining it different ways.
Well, I'm looking at the words defending our order is what I get a little bit confused by because I think our charge was to hear what this person had to say that they felt wasn't right in our order and listen to that openly and then come to a determination on whether we thought there was any merit to that or not and in which areas. So that seems a little different than just flat out defending our area looking for, but it's just a, probably semantics.
One thing about these reclamation cases, they always give us something new and different to do.
Okay, Jim, you'd covered three of them, and I haven't heard disagreement with from anyone that felt that you were wrong, that one of those first three were non-jurisdictional. Okay. So correct me if I'm wrong, Brian or Julie. But
so say what you just said, though. I heard the word non-jurisdictional. Maybe you just said it differently than I heard it.
I said I haven't heard anyone object and feel that those first three, that any of them were non-jurisdictional.
They are jurisdictional. Okay. Right.
I agree with that.
I agree with that.
Okay, then I guess the next grouping I have there is the revegetation items. And there, again, there are quite a few things there, mainly related to the native grassland reclamation. But part of that gets back to the productivity of the reclaimed ag lands, the requirement in the law that those be restored to pre-mine levels. Discussion with regard to introduced species on reclaimed land, you know, how much of that would be allowed, and particularly concerned with Kentucky bluegrass, broom grass, crested wheat, that came up. Kind of a roundabout way that there are diversity success standards came up for native grasslands. I guess they're, again, getting back to the number of native species that must be present for final bond release. Some discussion about including forb species in the seed mixture, which that was addressed, and I guess that's part of the plans in the permit. Some discussion on the control of noxious weeds. Then just this was kind of more of a mention. I really didn't get discussed in any detail. Mr. Voigt brought it up in his testimony about replacement of trees that are destroyed by mining, but that was never went into in further detail. But that's kind of the revegetation items that came up with.
Before you leave that area, what is our standard in mine reclamation on noxious weeds? We had a wind farm hearing not so long ago, and I can't remember the size. It was 10, 15,000 acres or something, and they said there were no noxious weeds in that area. And I said, well, I haven't been there, but I challenge that. I bet there are. So I don't know how you would ever end a mine site reclamation project and have none. So, but what is our standard?
Well, the basic standards go in that, you know, they can't be planting noxious species, but the control it's not generally real specific, but I guess just with through other the state's noxious weed laws and that, I guess it's something we see noxious weeds that on the mine site that's pointed out to the mine and saying you need to control those. But I don't think what I recall, Dean, that there we don't have a real specific performance standard saying laying out detailed control, but that more comes under other.
But if something is significant, we don't let that out of bond, do we?
Well, no, if it becomes significant, if a track would be dominated with noxious weeds, then it's not going to meet the standards otherwise. You know, as far as if it's, well, yeah, you're not going to meet productivity. Like, well, for example, at the old Glen Herald mine used to have concerns with leafy spurge, and if you get too much leafy spurge, you're not going to meet your diversity, your productivity standards as far as in meeting that, because if any of those noxious weeds are in there and you go out there and clip that, you can't count the weight of those noxious weeds. Those have to be discounted. So,
okay.
That stuff, and that was one thing that I kind of got, you know, listening to discussion about all the reclamation, and that I think it's coming up to, but isn't it really hard until you get to the reclamation phase for any of that to really have any bearing in anything?
Well, yeah, you don't know where you're at with regard to, well, with on the native grasslands, particularly as far as where you're at, as far as how good of a stand you have, if it's going to meet standards, that those native species generally take, you know, 3-4 years to get well established. So it's not until that time you really know what you have. You know, right now what we have in the permit is what species are going to be planted, and they do have a very diverse with many native species in that mixture.
Because I thought the whole discussion about what they wanted and for remediation was good discussion, but it's something that just didn't seem like was ripe at all for this hearing. I mean, that's part. It was really hard to even try to reconcile that discussion. And I don't know what your legal thoughts on that, and we'll get to that. But it just seemed out of place.
Well, on some of that discussion too, that was talked about, it was a matter of just with Mr. Voigt and some of the people that testified on his behalf. They were talking more or less restoring to what was there is there right now. Well, with the mining and the whole process, it's a matter of the law says reclaim, not restore. You have to restore productivity, but as far as restoring all the conditions, all the vegetation, all of that to what was there before mining, that isn't required, and that's.
But isn't that a point of contention potentially long after it's mined and after the soils have been put back in?
Well, that would come into play, you know, at the time of a bond release, which when bond release is requested, there is the opportunity for the interested parties, landowners, to get involved in that process too, because there's public notice given. We notify landowners, invite them to participate in those bond release inspections, so they have the right to voice their concerns at that time as well.
But that's where I don't have any conclusions here, but it's definitely revegetation is jurisdictional. But the timing of the concern, it seems like, is off.
Yeah, when you're looking at
that's
at
a, the, more at, of a legal conclusion down the road, I think.
At the end product, but then it's a matter, the methods that are being proposed are they good enough to hopefully reach that end point?
Fair enough. Required. I see your point.
Right. There's some expectation required of the company, and it is somehow described in the permit.
The plan should be such that you believe it'll produce the outcomes
yes.
you need.
So the part that's jurisdictional is there any evidence that you should change should the company change what they promised to do or what we're making them do as a condition of their permit?
Right.
And that's the extent of the jurisdiction, I think.
So it's not open-ended on revegetation issues. There's a constraint there somewhere.
Then another topic that was mentioned there, again, there wasn't an awful lot of discussion, from what I recall, what I had in my notes anyway, from the hearing, gets into some of the post-mining topography, the methods that are going to be used to regrade the land after mining. But there again, that's something that certainly is jurisdictional because we have specific standards on how that land has to be recontoured after mining.
On that subject, and it's one of those that Alana reminded me of it when you said something about seeing the transcript to see if what we heard is actually what was said.
Good point.
As I recall, I think one of Casey's concerns was not that, as you have it here, that the land is no steeper than the pre-mine conditions. I think one of his concerns was that there won't be any steep big hills left and that we have such gentle slopes that it takes away from the way that land fits into the surrounding area and the natural shelter and such that he gets with his existing property. So do we have options in that regard? Is that a concern that's jurisdictional?
Well, our grading requirements, it says take to the gentlest topography you can as long as it also has to blend in with the adjoining undisturbed lands too, but cannot exceed the approximate original contour, which is you know, there, again, there's a lot of there's various interpretations that can be made of approximate original contour, but generally it's a matter that the way we've looked at this for years is you look at the total area across the permit area, the areas that are going to be mined, if say your average slope is 6%, in the post-mining setting, you can't exceed that. There'll be some variations where some of the drainages get shifted and whatever else, but overall, that average post-mining slope has to be, as you know, no more than in that case that 6%, or if it ends up being 5% or 4%, and everything blends in, ties in, I guess so much the better, because the idea is to minimize the potential for erosion and have more stable landscape. So, and there again, with regard to the comments that I recall at the hearing, that those type of details didn't come up. It came up in fact, I think is in some of Casey's comments itself about he was concerned about the type of equipment that was going to be used with drag lines and was suggesting some other things, but there again, further down on my page, I guess the last item on there is non-jurisdictional, that I don't think there's anything in our law and rules that allows us to specify what type of equipment a mining company must use in carrying out their mining reclamation operations. I guess we have to see that the standards get met, but I don't see that we have any authority to say that you have to mine all this with a truck shovel versus a drag line, or use scrapers versus anything else. That's something that we don't have that type of authority to do that, in my opinion.
Okay, so just to kind of sum up where I think we're at here, we've kind of been through the first five of these points as jurisdictional, and I really haven't heard argument that any of those would be anything but jurisdictional.
I would agree with that to the point of there's a scope in all of them. The revegetation issues are jurisdictional, but the scope of what they're asking may not be ripe at this time. So I wouldn't agree that it's just a carte blanche that, yep, that's all, these are all jurisdictional now.
Point taken.
I agree they're jurisdictional, Randy.
Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah. Then another concern that came up is some of the settling, some of the unevenness on the reclaimed land. And that was probably more of a concern by some of the public that testified rather than Mr. Voigt. There again, the concerns about the settling, it's usually a matter that being an issue on cropland where Mr. Voigt's land, most of that's going back to native grassland. But there again, that is something that was raised, and I think it's something that will probably have to be addressed in the order. Another one that I just touched on real, what I consider pretty briefly, was water supply replacement. And
back to six, Jim. So you touched on by the order, but isn't that the same thing, that none of us want the settling to occur, but it will occur? And so the procedures in the order, which I'm sure we already have in our original order, that did address this. Maybe that's one where, to Randy's point, that maybe we wanted to add something that wasn't in. I mean, is that something like settling addressed in our original order? I don't remember.
You know, in our findings, that wasn't addressed in there, but it's something that we have addressed on. We address as it occurs, to the point where it's interfering with the use, that we require the mining companies to go out there and repair those settling features. So,
okay.
That's something where, you know, if felt it's a big enough issue that we could, you know, maybe that's something that could be addressed via special condition, because the commission does have the authority.
Well, and that's one of those things that I think I'm understanding better what you were saying, Alon, is that we go through, and they brought up settling, for example. If we don't address settling, that's something that somebody that would see this under appeal said, well, they said settling, you didn't address it, you leave yourself open to something. Understood.
Then the other one, I guess, was starting on the water supply replacement. And there again, there wasn't, I didn't really hear any, recall any specific concerns from Mr. Voigt on this, but there again, some others mentioned this about saying the need to replace water supplies. Well, that's something that is very clear in the law and rules. I don't think that's a, it's certainly a jurisdictional matter, but it's something that is certainly clearly required. Now, my last
Is that something you consider so clear? Did we address that in our order, or is it just something that you consider so fundamental to our laws and rules that need to be addressed in the order?
You know, I'd have to go back and look at the findings on that. I don't know, Randy, do you?
I've got a copy. I think it's
addressed with regard to the groundwater. It's in our cumulative hydrologic assessment.
If nothing else,
which is at least referenced in that permit document.
So it may not be in the findings itself, but referenced.
It's always kind of a challenge. You know, you write something so long and detailed that nobody reads it. Or do you leave some obvious things out and then people don't see it in there, so they think you missed it? So it's always a tough line.
The a question, I guess, for whoever the legal folks and Jim is that the, you know, during the hearing there was the two counsels had quite a bit of discussion back and forth, and the judge basically said, we'll let all this stuff come in. The commission can put whatever weight he or she, commissioners can put whatever weight he or she wants on it. How do we weigh people's testimony? I know I weigh it, but what's the legal standard of how do you address it when you've got someone that brings up a concern that is not even, they have really no standing to be in front of you as far as a legal viewpoint, but it's their right to come in and say that whatever they heard at the coffee shop. How do you address those kind of things? Is that something that you have to, or is that something that a judge would look at that and say, let's, this person didn't have, I mean, how do you legally address that? I know I address it.
Well,
Casey says something that's got a different weight in my mind than if the guy who lives 20 miles down the road says it.
I think we'll want the order to say something, but I don't think the order has to spend pages going through each public comment that's about things that are non-jurisdictional to the permit standard. But you can say in a general way that the public brought up issues about this and that, you know, and they're more appropriately addressed by the legislature or in rulemaking or, you know, and people are invited to petition for rules or, you know, you figure out what it is you think of them, because your second question is how much weight to give it. But your first question is it relevant to the issues before you? And many of the public comments were not.
Well, that's what I thought is it's what happened in a mine 40 years ago. I understand they may be upset about it and the rules weren't in place, but it really has no bearing on what's in front of us now.
Right. I think you mentioned that, though, in an order. It would not have the same standing on appeal if it's not relevant evidence that you chose not to believe because you believed other relevant evidence more. It doesn't come into that appeal standard where you have to explain why you believed A more than you believed B, because it's the threshold question. It's not relevant evidence to the issues.
And it's not that they didn't believe what they were saying. It's
right.
The relevant part of it.
Right. So you address it that way, and however you want to make an offer to come talk to us another time or go to your legislator or whatever you want to say there.
Continue.
Okay. Well, the last time, Helen, there was the documents demonstrating right to mine. I guess that gets into some of the lease issues, which are... I guess what we have to ensure there is that the mining company has the right to mine, that they do have the surface coal leases from the surface owners or other surface owner consent before the commission issues the permit. But any dispute over those leases themselves, basically that contract, that's something that is not jurisdictional and under the reclamation law. But we have to ensure the mining companies do have the right to mine. Then that leads into, like,
so if someone felt that they weren't treated fairly and they have a legal case on it, that's not with us. What you're saying is they would need to go to a regular court of law and have a case based on some kind of a contractual dispute.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
Does that have to be addressed in our order, any of these things of that say there was much discussion on things that were non-jurisdictional, or does that go without saying?
I think you say something like the one sentence Jim wrote here. I mean, you're going to find that there is a right to mine, an existing lease, but the disputes about the fairness of the lease or what provisions mean or whatever are not, you know, jurisdictional to the commission. I mean, I think you say that because that shows that you looked into the argument. So but it's really one sentence or two.
Well, that kind of wraps up Jim's list of topics that he considered jurisdictional. Julie, do you have anything in there that you disagreed with, or any other ideas that you wanted to bring up that
nope.
you thought were jurisdictional that he missed?
I don't. I thought he covered it's a good list.
One thing that I didn't see addressed in here, and I don't even know exactly where to bring it up, but there was a point about the keep out or private postings on lands that weren't anywhere near being mined yet. Do we need to address that somewhere? As I recall, then the mine had changed those signs, but just still needed to leave their boundary markers up. But since it was brought up, do we need to address that at all, or is that something that you consider non-jurisdictional, or what?
You know, it's jurisdictional to the point that the mining company at points of access to the permit area, they have to have signs identifying the permit area and contact information for the mining company, and has the I think permit number and different things on as far as including the language on there about no trespassing. I guess that's something that is not addressed one way or the other by our law and rules. So, you know, I think if that was a concern, well, I guess what I heard was Don Steffen or somebody else saying that they would change those signs to not have that language on there. But
since it was brought up, should our potential order address that point of the fact that the mine does need to post their perimeter boundaries and what information needs to be on those postings?
You know, we could cover that as far as you know, what the requirements are, and there include a statement. There are no provisions saying that they have to say there's no trespassing or any of that. That's not one of the provisions for signs and markers for the mining companies to post.
Jim, is there any point at which they are supposed to keep the public away from the mining areas, we require them to do that?
Well, it's specifically required for when they're conducting blasting operations. There's blast sirens that have to be sounded before and after blast, and other markings near that blast site. But that's pretty much limited to as far as keeping public out. But I guess a lot of companies do it just for not wanting people to wander into the site and getting injured, killed, or whatever by entering into an active mine area where there's dangers that there wouldn't be otherwise. So,
are there liability issues that is involved with the permitting, or you know how are we involved in supporting the mine's efforts to limit the liability that they have for hurting the public if somebody does wander into one of those areas?
Well, we have provisions in this, but in both state and federal law where the mining companies have to have liability insurance, and we have to get copies of those certificates of liability insurance. That's something that that is a requirement of the reclamation law.
Hey, I think we're ready to move on.
Yeah, it's all right. I just had one thing that I had a note to ask about is that I was still a little unclear about, you know, the whole discussion about buying them out, not buying them out. That's not jurisdictional. I get that. But if that does happen, is there a notification that happens to us? That's still where I didn't get it. That wasn't clear to me in the hearing.
I guess there's probably no real requirements that we be notified of that, but that's something that would be updated in the permit. We are required to conduct midterm permit reviews. The permit terms are 5 years, and we do those midterms halfway through that period.
Because there was a limit of 500 feet around the household and things like that. I mean, that could change, so it'd be in a permit renewal potentially that they would address if something had changed.
If that could be in the renewal, another revision. If they got that setback where they buy it out and want to conduct operations, you know, closer to the farmstead and that. If they own it, they'd need to revise the permit to show what disturbances they plan in that area.
But just if they bought them out, that would be no changes to anything. That's all between them and him, and nothing that would affect us unless they wanted to change the land use.
Yeah. Okay. Unless they change their mining because of that. But it's something that would eventually be updated in the permit, because that's something we typically ask for as part of these midterm reviews or we call our pre-renewal reviews.
Occupied residents and all those things.
Well, basically to update the land ownership information so we know who's the owner. So if Mr. Voigt would sell out to Coyote Creek, then we'd see a change there. So.
Okay. That's all I had, Randy.
Well, that leads into the non-jurisdictional topics that I saw or that the staff see, I guess, with regard to discussion, and you know, some of it gets into the royalty and other payment terms under the coal lease.
Does it make a difference that it was in the record that the lease, the Mr. Casey, I can't remember his last name, Voigt, Mr. Voigt had an attorney representing him when he signed the lease? Does that make a difference at all in what a judge would say, or... And I'm just wondering if that's something that, I know it's not jurisdictional, but there is a fact that it wasn't just somebody signing a lease. There was a legal representation that took place.
If they were suing each other in district court about some intent or something like that, it might make a difference. It doesn't make any difference to our issues.
Okay.
Because it's all about it being outside our jurisdiction.
So once it's out of our jurisdiction, all those other things kind of does for some. Okay.
Then, that gets into a fair amount of discussion about the company dealings with Mr. Voigt during the lease negotiation. That's something that I guess that is not jurisdictional. And the mention about the possible land swap, there again, that's for the two parties to work out if they're going to consider something like that. There again, the next item I have on the list about economic losses during mining and reclamation and payments under, and payments for those losses under the coal lease or surface leases that were executed by the current or past owners. There again, that gets into the contractual matter. Again, that is something that is not jurisdictional as far as under the reclamation law. There are concerns Mr. Voigt brought up about statements that were made to him about how the mining would progress through this area and where mine facilities would be located. But there again, that's something that something that happened prior to permit submittal. That's something we have no control over.
Talk through me that a little bit, Jim. That one I was just questioning. So what they file with the PSC. That lays out their plan to when they're going to mine their coal and do all that other stuff. So anything discussion that happened before then, that's non-jurisdictional discussion. And then once they file, that's a jurisdiction. Then it becomes jurisdiction because they filed it.
Become, I guess, once we it's in the permit and once they have these plans, we basically have to, you know, part of the permit approval, approve those locations of where the facilities will be, how the mining will, you know, the pit layout, mining sequence. That's all details that are in the permit. But if they had said something else to the landowners when they were negotiating leases, what they thought may happen as how mining proceed, I guess we really have no control over that.
Okay.
I guess if there again, that comes into again, basically back to some of the dealings as they're negotiating leases and what is said there. That's
okay.
I don't see there's anything that we could have any jurisdiction authority over that. That's.
I just sometimes try to relate this to our wind sightings, and it's a whole different section. There's all kinds of different roles where we can, turbines, we can move those buggers around right up until the very end. This is a whole different section of law.
But even in the sighting, what they said to the landowner about where the turbines were going 6 months before they filed here.
Doesn't matter to
us.
It
doesn't matter.
It goes back to what they filed for their turbine locations. Got it.
And these mine plans change as the years go by too, right?
Yeah, they do.
They don't plan 25, 30 years out and go in that exact order. I assume those change fairly frequently, don't they?
Yeah. No, it's just like the type of cattle you raise on your ranch. That you may have Angus one day and you decide to change to Hereford or something different, I guess. That, you know, as things go on, you know, the conditions change where things change. And the process is for revising the permit, and you know, there again, if there's a significant change, we consider those, or deem them significant revisions, where that has to go out for public notice again. So,
well, I'd imagine in a case like this, the federal coal leases could change that mine plan.
That would, and that any time they propose mining some additional coal, there again, substantial amount. If it's just a couple acres here or there, that's not a thing. But if they come in and get a lease for a quarter section of federal coal, that's going to be a significant revision when they incorporate those mine plans into the permit. So, then the last item I have on the list there is what I talked about earlier, as far as about, you know, specifying the type of equipment that must be used for the mining reclamation operations. That that in relationship to the comments that Mr. Voigt made, was concerned about the compaction that he felt occurred with removing and the overburden with drag lines and that. So,
well, I'd have a hard time arguing with any of your points here, Jim. But I'm curious, from Alana's perspective, if we chose to argue any of these last six and say that we felt they were jurisdictional, is there anything in there that you see that we could use as jurisdictional and make some requirement on the mine and not just be very likely to get thrown out upon appeal?
No, I mean, if we're comfortable that that our statutory authority does not cover something, then there's no... I mean, you would be thrown out on appeal. There would be no basis for you to say, you can say, to be helpful, you know, go to the legislature, come back and we'll have a little discussion about whether we should go to the legislature together or something like that, but not, you can't take jurisdiction where you don't have it.
I remember the discussion about wind leases when I first got here, and all this discussion, there was all these things going on, and in the next session there was a whole new wind lease disclosure bill. Because of that, we had that same discussion on wind stuff.
Jim, you've kind of brought up with the last item on the type of equipment and some of their issues there with what I kind of viewed as a few of the different issues they brought up, wanting to prescribe certain techniques and certain things that have to be done, where it seems like we look more at outcomes. So like the equipment, we could prescribe, I suppose, what kind of equipment can or cannot be used, but it seems like we look more at, if there was compaction caused by equipment, then that would be something that the mines would have to take care of. And we assume that they use equipment that's going to minimize compaction because they don't want to deal with that. Am I viewing those things kind of correctly?
Yeah, no, I think that's correct, Julie, and that we wouldn't say you can't use this, but if something causes that compaction, then that's something we deal with in some of the travel areas, road areas with heavy equipment, you get that compaction. Then it's a matter of the company going in, taking steps to alleviate that compaction. And, you know, if we become aware of some other techniques that may reduce compaction, try to do things to prevent that, to recommend that to the companies, no problem doing that. But sometimes when you get too prescriptive, then we become more responsible for the outcome. So it's if the outcome is something we say you have to do it this way and the results don't come out the way we want it, then we told them to do it. Then they come back saying, well, we're just doing what you said we had to do, and it's your fault, not ours, type of thing. So I guess we don't want to put ourselves into that type of a situation either. So
that sort of leads me to a question I've had from time to time, but are settling problems and compaction problems basically opposites, where someone tries so hard to make sure they don't have compaction that it's not packed well enough, and then is that what causes the settling issues later, or are they unrelated?
I think they're unrelated. The compaction issues we generally see, it's at that interface between the topsoil and subsoil, that during the respread of subsoil, they're traveling across, and some of that, and some of the times it depends on the texture of the material too, and moisture that gets compacted, then you grab on it again once they come back to put back topsoil, and depending on where you're going, you get too much traffic, there can be compaction problems. And in some cases, the mine companies actually use some of the subsoil for some of their roads. And on that, just seeing the problems, we're saying, once you're done using those roads, you're going to have to go in there, get the surface material off, then go in there and rip and disc up that subsoil to alleviate that compaction. So, but and some other places seen it. And as far as there seems to be a bigger difference. It's mostly on these road areas. I know earlier down at the Gascoigne mine, there was a tract of land just based on some of the crops on there a couple of years. I was thinking that maybe the whole thing had that compacted layer, and we were out on bond release on that, and we had the soil penetrometer and shoved that into the ground. It was pretty much the same on reclaimed land as it was on the adjoining undisturbed land, so that wasn't there. So,
and the settling is usually caused by problems further down in the overburden, or
I think so. That goes down further. That sometimes I think with some of the dragline operations, you get some of the materials or the chunks rolling down that go kind of in the valleys between the spoil ridges. That may be some of the chunks, and you get, particularly in the wintertime, maybe sometimes snow, ice accumulate in some of those, and that something that can happen, many years after the grading is completed. But actually with some of those issues with like a dragline placement, I would almost think you'd be concerned about not enough compaction there rather than too much. But
Anything else that we should be covering?
I just had one more note on the non-jurisdictional discussion. I had a note on, there was a lot of discussion about they didn't like the standards. And so, okay, that standards are what the standards are. So I don't know if that should be, that's a non-jurisdictional topic too. So I don't know where we'd address that.
Well, that and the related, I think, other reclamation all around the state on other mines. That's one of the non-jurisdictional, but non-issue for this case, with a little subcategory under there, which is kind of what the standards also are. If it's in law or rule and not something that is discretionary in the permit, and by that I'm even including tweaking standards if the company's willing, you can do that. Special conditions or whatever you called it, Jim, then it should be down under that non-jurisdictional section.
I just brought that up as something to make sure in the order. And isn't there, though, there's something, I know it is for pipelines, but the state cannot impose stricter standards than the federal law has for pipelines. Does that apply for this?
No, it doesn't.
Well, and it's because everything is approved by OSM. I mean, it doesn't get into state standards until it's approved by OSM.
Right.
And so if it's a little stricter, but they approve it, you're done.
So we're not going, okay.
But it's still, I think it has to be things related to the provisions.
Oh, yeah.
In the law and rule. We can't go beyond that. But I guess what your comment there with regard to provisions in our law and rules are more strict than the federal, particularly with regard to approving reclamation success about the productivity being at least equal to what it was prior to mining. That's not
in that way. Then we should remind people of that in the order.
That's not in the federal law other than for prime farmland, and OSM rules say on non-prime.
But those are the kind of things
go to 90%
to remind people in this next version of the order. You know, when we've set the standard as this, we appreciate that this, here's the process of that. North Dakota already has a toughest standard than federal law requires. So, Alon, I've just had this beat dead horse one last time, then I'll quit, okay? So I think I've got it a little clearer in my mind about our opening discussion. Okay, so let's just hypothetically, we go through and we do something. If the case gets appealed, I'm thinking back to our telephone appeals, back to, and we can talk, you know, Mid-Continent and Nemont go into discussion. We side with Mid-Continent. It gets appealed to the Supreme Court. Then Mid-Continent and us go in with a brief to the Supreme Court. Is that when I'm thinking already ahead to an appeal where we end up partnering up, for lack of a better term, with one of the groups? I mean, do you see where I'm, my back and forth here?
I sort of do, yes. The order will be based on the record, and right, it'll have findings and conclusions. And if it gets appealed, and one's going to win and one's going to lose, I think, or maybe we'll come out somewhere in the middle, and they'll both appeal. I don't know.
Exactly.
And you can have that if you impose some condition that the mining company didn't like, and then you refuse to impose some others. But at that point in time, the interests of the commission and the person defending the order at that point in time are aligned.
So that's the difference, and this is one more step in the reclamation process than we'd see in a telephone case or a,
yes,
or a wind case. That's the difference then.
Well, okay. But it'll play out the same in the end. I mean, like in, look at the TIA appeal today, the commission,
right,
and MDU, because you found for MDU, commission and MDU's interests are aligned, and they're on the same side in the appeal. So whichever way you decide here, if it's appealed, the winner and the commission would be both defending the same order.
Okay.
If this is appealed.
You get all that, Casey? You can't pay for this kind of education. Thank you, Lana.
Julie, did you have anything else?
I don't, but can someone remind me of that timeline? How many weeks out are we from having the draft order from
As I recall, and we wrapped this up like the 2nd of January, and the stenographer thought about 6 weeks to get the transcript done, And then I think Casey's side had 2 weeks, to file his closing arguments. And then I think North American had
10 days after that.
10 days after that to file theirs. So we're probably
specific dates.
What's that?
I thought we identified specific dates for those last two items.
No, everything hinged on when the transcript was complete.
Oh, it did.
But so we're probably looking at into March.
Okay.
Yeah, I think easily if it takes the full 6 weeks to get the transcript, that's. Then once we get the closing statements from Coyote Creek, then I think that's the start of the 30 days we have to get a ruling in the matter. So
that's a great point, Jim, that we can't lose sight of. Is that's why I don't want to be put in a box where we put this away for 6-8 weeks and all of a sudden we got 30 days to develop an order that can withstand appeal all the way to the top, because that's what this is looking. This will be no matter how it goes. In my opinion, we've been down this road before.
Anything else? We're wrapped up.
Thank you, guys. Have a good weekend.